Thank you very much for the introduction. My father would have appreciated it. My mother would have believed it. It's a pleasure to be here today, and I'm going to talk briefly with you about some work that we have been doing over the last year and a half at the University of Kentucky, specifically focusing on emerging partnerships in improving community health, primarily between health departments and hospitals. I do have no financial or other relationships to disclose. Let me just briefly introduce you to the topic. We're going to talk about the basic purpose and objectives of this study, successful partnerships focused on improving community health. I will touch on the phases of the study. I'm going to give you some idea of the study population, then talk briefly about the core characteristics of successful partnerships, and then some key patterns or themes that have emerged in the process of conducting this study, closing remarks, and then any questions or discussions that you might have. The purpose of this study was to accelerate change and encourage collaboration and contribution toward improving the culture of health, which by now should be very familiar to all of you who are out hustling bucks like we are in American communities. And what we wanted to do was identify and study successful partnerships primarily between hospitals and public health departments. About 2 years ago at the Keeneland Conference, the CEO of the American Hospital Association, Rich Umbenstock, issued a kind of a statement saying, we in hospitals don't know a thing about public health, population health, and we better learn. And you guys are the ones that know it, so we need to link with public health. And what we need to do is find successful examples of those linkages so we can help hospitals and health departments know how to most effectively do it. The president of ASTO, Paul Jarris, and NACHO, Bobby Pestruck, were both there and responded to that, indicated their interest to do it. And shortly thereafter, we actually began this work, again, involving primarily hospitals, public health departments, and other stakeholders who share a commitment to improving community health. And what we wanted to do was ascertain key lessons learned from their collective experience. The specific objectives is, first of all, to locate collaborative partnerships involving hospitals and health departments that are focused on improving community health. We assumed that there were some out there. We were surprised at what a wonderful response we got. To identify a set of these partnerships that have been in operation for at least 2 years. We wanted them in place before ACA was implemented because ACA, as you know, calls for community health needs assessments for nonprofit community hospitals, and with the advent of FAB, that we would have that community health assessment, community health improvement planning is required for accreditation. So we had impetus for that prior or following ACA and following implementation of FAB. So we wanted to look before that at places that had some degree of maturity. We're going to study these partnerships, and wanted to learn more about how they started, how they were organized, what their goals were, how progress is assessed, and lessons we could learn from that collective experience, and then try to provide and develop some insights that we could provide to others who were interested in developing this similar opportunity. The first thing we did is to identify the core characteristics of successful partnerships, and I will touch on those later. We went to the literature on collaboration and partnership and did an in-depth review of the literature and came up with a series of characteristics of successful partnerships and collaboration. We invited partnerships and operations or two or more who demonstrated that core characteristics to participate in the study. What we did actually is went to the people at the state and national level who could help us. We went to ASTO, who worked with the shows to identify places that were there, NACHO, who worked to identify local health departments. The American Hospital Association communicated with all their state hospital executives. The American Medical Association communicated with all of the state medical associations. We had ACHI involved. We had Catholic Hospital Association. We had NNPHI and a number of other partners who were out there looking for these successful partnerships and nominating them to us. We wanted to select the highly successful partnerships from a pool of 157 nominees. And what we did is we did have 157 nominees who felt that they met the successful characteristics of successful partnerships that had been existed. Then what we did is we did a deep dive into a limited number of those that we screened down, and I will talk a little bit about that process and the ones that were there. We wanted to review, tabulate, and verify the data obtained through the nomination process, documents, individual interviews with partnerships, and small group discussions. We spent a full 2 days in each of the communities that we chose for participation in this particular activity. And then we used qualitative analysis to discern patterns and conclusions and to formulate the recommendations that we're going to move forward. Here are the 12 that eventually were selected. I understand there may be representatives in the room of at least some of them. Fitnola, I think, is here. Someone told me that Hometown Partners was going to have some folks here. I think here some people here from King County and Transforming King County. And I think we may have somebody from Detroit and the task force to do infant mortality reduction. The core characteristics that we use to try to identify these have the following characteristics. First, mission, vision, and values. What we wanted is a clear statement of those, and that they were focused on improving community health and that everybody bought into it. That the partners demonstrated a culture of collaboration with other parties, and they enjoyed mutual trust and respect, an issue that will come back again in our discussion of findings. We wanted the goals and objectives of the partnership to be clearly stated, widely communicated, and supported by not only the partners and partnership staff, but as you can see later on, by the community at large. Organizational structure, that there was in place some sort of mechanism to assure that this collaborative relationship continued. It could be a corporate entity, it could be a nonprofit, it could be some other less formal arrangement that could be made. We wanted somebody as an executive director, somebody who could manage the program. We wanted to see the partnership operations be efficient and effective. We wanted to see that it had been in place for at least 2 years, and it demonstrated a positive impact, if at all possible, on the health of the population that they were focusing on. We also were interested in looking at performance evaluation and metrics, specific objectives that partnerships had identified. Let me talk briefly about some of the key patterns or themes that have emerged from the study of these particular ones. The first thing is that with 157 nominees, as well as our awareness of other things that were going on, I think there is no question that across the United States we're seeing the development of collaborative relationships that previously had not existed between and amongst various partners in the healthcare system. We believe this preceded ACA, and in many cases, we're delighted by that. We believe that it has been in part facilitated by ACA, because many of these partnerships took advantage of their existing partnership to do the CHNA and the CHACHIP that are required by FAB or the IRS. There's a growing recognition that, in point in fact, if we're going to have value purchasing and improve community health, that in point in fact, we're going to have to work together, hospitals and health departments. Neither can work in their own silo, and the silos have to be broken down. The creation of these partnerships came from a variety of sources. The first thing is sometimes you had a strong leader with a vision. In New Ulm, we had a cardiologist who was convinced that if he worked with the New Ulm community, that he could decrease acute myocardial infarction through intervention in their activities. So his vision became the opportunity for New Ulm to move forward with their particular collaborative. Sometimes a community crisis creates this. I think the bankruptcy of Detroit, the discovery that some of the areas in Detroit had infant mortality rates that rivaled third world nations, really bestirred the leadership of the Henry Ford Health System and reflected the fact that they felt they had to do something about this particular problem. Sometimes there are grants such as the CTGs that have incentivized some of these and facilitated their development. It's helpful to have a prior existing relationship and mutual trust. Even where you have competing hospitals, we found that the health department is a good neutral convener, which can bring together hospitals that ordinarily would kill each other over one more patient to collaborate with the health department in trying to improve the community health. And Quad Cities in Iowa, which was one of ours, there were two hospitals that were at each other's throats. There were two health departments in two different states. So we had two states, two health departments, two hospitals, but yet they came together in a collaborative and cooperative mechanism. So, and they had a good working relationship. Interestingly enough, this has now led to an economic development collaboration between those two communities. So we think there's some benefit that can accrue in a different way. And again, most of these preceded the CHNA or the FAB requirements. The mission statement all focus on this. Having said that, the mission statements vary. Some of them are very narrow. The one in Detroit focused specifically on a small series of census tracts to very expansive. And in New Hampshire, where they decided they were going to become the nation's healthiest community by 2020. So they were all over the board. The mission goals of the particular partnership clearly drove the difficulty of their work. The more narrow it was, the more easily it was to get their work done. Obviously, the broader it was, the more complex it was to accomplish. And to be important and key here is it had to inspire and drive community support to be marketed not only to community leaders, but the community at large. And how one went about the process of community engagement was a key element of our particular activity. In addition, because many of these were partnerships with existing well-known facilities, Henry Ford Health System, Kaiser Permanente, whatever, it was important that these partnerships be branded so their work could be identified. The active engagement of many partners and ongoing collaboration is essential to success and sustainability. And again, you want to try, if at all possible, to build on a foundation of pre-existing trust-based relationship. It works a heck of a lot better when the hospital director, CEO, and the health department guy or gal are in the same Rotary Club and have lunch a few times and can chat with each other so that they are trusting relationships that can be built on. Other organizations can be added, but be careful that they share your goals and objectives. If they don't, they sometimes can be problematic. We were tremendously disappointed to discover two very important missing partners in all but one of these. With the exception of Kaiser Permanente, there was no involvement by health plans. And we think that's a tremendous problem. The second thing is, in many cases, business and the business community was missing from these partnerships. These need attention. And it does take a village, and the village has to stay engaged. Many of the partnerships continue to be challenged in developing crisp, clear goals, objectives, and showing linkage between them and the measures of population health. What happens is a lot of these communities will go in and they will have a series of objectives that run to two pages. And they will have one of the proprietary organization's 240 metrics that they'll put up on a website. There's no way in hell you can follow 240 metrics. What you've got to do is identify some particular objectives and priorities that you've got, identify the metrics, a limited number associated with those, and then absolutely pursue those metrics aggressively. Not only that, you need to focus on impact and return on investment in some of these things, because that's how we believe that you will begin to engage more effectively the business and the health plan community by looking at value and return on investment. Most of these, interestingly enough, were not formed as corporate entities. They were loose affiliation arrangements. And we were surprised at that because we thought that a lot of them would be separate 501c3s. They're not. They're just collaborations that are sort of handshake agreements or have a memorandum of understanding or a memorandum of agreement between the various players. Informal, but it seems to work. But having said that, you have to have a strong anchor institution that's willing to be kind of provide the indirect services that you ordinarily would cost, It can be the health department, it can be the hospital. It doesn't make any difference. But somebody's got to house them, feed them, put heat in, put the air conditioning in, provide a Xerox machine, a phone, a website, et cetera, et cetera. And that anchor institution is key in our judgment. The leadership styles varied. It was very interesting as we began to look at this. And that what we saw was that early on you had charismatic leaders who were responsible for the initial development of this particular critter. And that people followed them because of their charisma. However, as the partnerships developed, we had turnover in almost 60% of the leadership of those partnerships. The new leaders were really servant leaders. They were not the kind of individual that led because they had had authority or responsibility, but were in point in fact servant leaders and were able to bring these folks along. Because so many of these depended upon volunteers, an autocratic leadership style would not have worked. A servant leadership style was much, much more important. Their challenge to demonstrate measurable progress, improving the communities they serve. They realize and we realize how difficult it is to bend the curve. There's no question. And that sometimes it's necessary to use short-term process intermediate objectives, low-hanging fruit, so that you can be successful and you can point to your success to the partners and to the community at large so that you continue to have some credibility while recognizing that these intermediate objectives are not what you're eventually going to have to come to, and that you, in fact, have to have the long-term objectives. Many of them are still in the early process and are wrestling with this task. Financial and physical responsibility and sustainability is a problem, essentially, with all of these. They're lightly funded. Several are dependent upon external support. What we suggest is at the outset, as these community partnerships develop, that they begin immediately to think about the sustainability of the partnerships in terms of financial stability and ongoing support, and not depend upon a CTG grant or something else from CDC, but rather resources that are internal to the organizations themselves. And we feel it's important that there be impact statements, again, which reflect return on investment and value, because we believe that's what will sell with those that are of concern and interest. Let me close with just these brief remarks. First of all, what you've seen is a kind of a quick overview. The full report, which runs some 100 pages with appendices, will be available both online and in hard copy the 1st of December. It will probably be available on the University of Kentucky, ASTO, NACHO, and RWJ and AHA's website. So that will be readily available to you electronically the 1st of December. We're really going to roll it out, so you're getting a preview. I want to thank our funders. God bless. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Grant Thornton, and Hospera. I also want to thank the communities. Their kindness, their hospitality, their support. They were just delightful when we came to visit them. Out of the 62 we asked for additional information, 58 came with the additional information. I can't say enough kind things about the generosity and support of the communities that we did visit and participate. And I also wish to thank my co-authors on this particular study who are listed here. With that, I'll take any questions because I got to catch a plane. So, any questions from the group? Yes. Yeah, in some places, interestingly enough, what you do, you know, the social workers will tell you, start where the client is, and in many cases where we did is we were able to talk, in places where we know there was a success with the business, it was through the chamber. And if you had an active chamber and the chamber recognized the benefit of some of the other socio-ecological determinants, you were in Steve Wool's talk about education and an educated workforce. If you're talking about absenteeism and being present at work, if you're talking about the health insurance charges that you can experience as a result. So in some ways, it's a mechanism of getting to them, and that's a key. And we use the chamber in many places because in many cases, the chamber, quite frankly, is more progressive than the businesses they represented. So that I would comment. As I say, the only health plan, and this was the thing that was really disappointing to us, that was engaged was Kaiser. And they were engaged in two of our partnerships, the two in California. And I would think that health plans would have a dog in the fight and would be hard on working with us in this, and yet they weren't. It was providers. Yes? Ah, another one I can shout out.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, though, that Kaiser has been a support to Lamar Healthy Montgomery.
Bam.
Healthy
Montgomery. Healthy Montgomery was one of the places I personally had the opportunity to visit, and I must admit that it was, I got a real kick out of it. It was they had really, really good leadership from their health department, from their city and county, or their county councilman who's there, and their hospitals. I mean, I've never seen a more committed group of people. Montgomery County is a really kind of interesting place because it's where NIH is, so it's a very odd community to come together like that. But there are clearly pockets of problems that they have that they're beginning to deal with, I think, in a very effective way. Comment just briefly on that, too, as well. We, through our work, we discovered that both Maryland and New York, we understand some other states, have gotten engaged in this in more detail. And the Rate Setting Commission in Maryland, everyone's aware that they have a hospital rate setting commission, is moving in the direction, Josh Sharfstein tells us, of a capitated payment. Well, all of a sudden, heads and beds ain't going to make it for hospitals, so they're looking to get heads out of the beds. And so that's going to change the metric, I think, there. And the same thing we saw in New York with their 1115 Medicaid waiver, where they're actually putting population health into their Medicaid reimbursement waiver. So I think those kinds of reimbursement strategies are going to prove to be very interesting and may be emulated by others. Any other questions I can respond to? I thank you very much for your attention, and I appreciate your allowing me to excuse myself to go get on a big old bird and fly back to where it's colder than bejesus. So thank you again very much.